It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here as we break down state budget priorities as the powerful Budget Writing Committee Joint Finance prepares to craft a two-year budget in coming months amid the state's historic surplus and after Governor Tony Evers laid out his budget plan. We get the Republican perspective later this hour with a committee vice chair. Be part of this discussion on government spending and what needs a budget line. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Democratic State Senator LaTanya Johnson of Milwaukee is on the 16-member Joint Finance Committee. State Senator Johnson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Republican leaders have signaled planning to design a budget of their own making, a budget from scratch, rather than modifying the governor's plan. We've also heard they're expressing working from a base level budget. What could this approach mean for the budget process?
Well, we've seen them do that every budget cycle now, going back to base and then rebuilding from scratch. The problem with that is that Governor Evers has truly crafted a budget for Wisconsin's working families. Not only can you craft a budget and spend money and resources where it's most needed, but he's also created a way to increase our rainy day fund by $500 million, making that at $2.4 billion, while also giving an additional $500 million to fix the amount to about $600 million to oppose spending commitments in the event that, you know, we have problems meeting our financial obligations. Or in the event that, you know, taxes drop to about 2%. So we can do both. Unfortunately, the reason that we have such a large surplus is because my Republican colleagues refuse to spend money where it's most needed.
Is there a possibility that the legislature could end up holding on to a large amount of that money instead of returning it to taxpayers or funding government services in this budget?
That's the thing that worries me most and gives me most concern, is that we will hold on to a lot of that money. We saw in the height of the pandemic that this state spent absolutely nothing to ensure that Wisconsinites were okay, to ensure that our businesses could continue to stay open and operate. Instead, they did nothing until we received money from the ARPA funds, which were federally funded funds. And that money was what Governor Evers used to keep the state running. And if a global pandemic was not a source for using rainy day funds, I don't know what was.
Let's look over some particulars. Governor Evers seeking to create up to 12 weeks of paid family and medical leave for public and private employees. The plan includes a one-time cost of around $240 million from the state. What do you think of this plan?
I think it's something that's very much needed. We all know that there are a lot of people living paycheck to paycheck. But in the realm of things, we are all just one phone call away from catastrophe, whether that being taking care of your sick parents or your elderly parents, or having a child that becomes significantly ill and needing to take some time off from work. We need to make sure that every individual, every working individual has an opportunity for paid family medical leave so we won't see those families fall further into poverty.
We're talking about the next two-year state budget with Milwaukee State Senator LaTanya Johnson, Democratic member of the legislature's Budget Writing Committee. You can join in with your questions and comments about the budget, 800-642-1234. Turning now to education, Governor Evers' budget would provide an additional $2.6 billion in education funding. And, you know, you're a member of the State Senate's Education Committee. How would you want the state to prioritize this additional education money flowing into this part of the budget?
Well, we know mental health is huge, and the governor's budget proposes investing $270 million of that money into school mental health to make sure that our children receive the mental health professionals and the staff necessary to keep those children afloat. We saw them suffer dramatically during COVID-19, and we still have a lot of grounds to make up in terms of their mental health and also in terms of their education. Governor Evers also proposes spending a significant amount of that money, over $7 million, to help increase the cost of our high-need special education. We're going to take that from a 39.5% investment to a 60% investment. Now, what makes our special needs category so important is because if a school has a child, especially with high needs, special needs, that requires extremely intensive care, maybe 24 hour, but maybe around the clock aid assistance, if the school does not have enough money to meet the needs of that child, then they have to take that money from their regular general fund. And that means every other child in that school suffers because the school is having to make up that cost. So with that investment, the schools will at least have 60% of those needs taken care of. And then he also proposes adding additional money to help local special needs education to help that reach the level of 60% too. Our special needs children are entitled to a quality education, something that this state hasn't been investing in significantly like they should for a very long time.
The governor's budget plan would also raise how much school districts can collect from local taxpayers for each student. Do you support raising taxes to raise per pupil funding, even amid these economic challenges like inflation?
The concerning thing for that is that I know it's hard for everybody during this time, but people want to invest more in their schools because they understand that investing in our children's future is the only way to ensure that Wisconsin will be okay later on in life. These children are entitled to quality education, especially our children that are living in underserved areas. Education is not equitable in the state, and we know that from the disparities that we see between our Black and white students. So making sure that we can close that educational gap, making sure that every child receives a quality education within their neighborhoods is extremely important.
I want to ask you this. So, you know, we've heard from Republican leaders that, you know, they would consider increasing funding for public schools if it's tied to an expansion of private school vouchers. How will JFC grapple with those competing interests, those competing priorities?
You know, I am one of probably the only state elected who had a child go through the choice program. I was extremely poor when I got elected, and so my daughter went to school on choice. And, you know, we have to make sure that our public schools are well funded, but we also have choice and charter schools that are not meeting up to par, and that's unfortunate. And we're finding it difficult to fund both of those systems. You know, choice and charter schools were created because public schools were not necessarily where they should be in terms of equitability. And now we're seeing a lot of those choice and charter schools not up to where they should be in terms of equitability because the regulations for opening some of these schools is not where it should be. And unfortunately, our children are suffering. They're suffering because the schools in their neighborhood are not quality, and they're suffering because the schools that they're being sent to are not quality. So we have to find a way to equalize that educational system. So regardless of where our children go, that they receive a quality education.
Democratic State Senator LaTanya Johnson represents Milwaukee's 6th Senate District, is on the legislature's Budget Writing Committee. Call in with your questions about government spending and what you want to convey to this committee. 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we dig into the two-year budget cycle and the work of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, we have perspective from two state senators who sit on the budget writing panel that will spend the coming months shaping their plan. We will talk later with the Republican vice chair. Be part of this conversation now by calling in with your questions, your comments. Share what should be signed into law or what should be stripped out. 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. We have Democratic State Senator LaTanya Johnson of Milwaukee here. Senator Johnson, what are your goals for upcoming budget hearings as a minority party member of Joint Finance Committee?
My goal for the upcoming budget committees is to highlight some of those agencies that have been starved of resources to make sure that they get the resources that they need to provide the services that they need. One example of that venue is public defenders. For example, here in Milwaukee, courts are finding a really hard time hiring public defenders. And that is supposed to be a cost that is paid for by the state. In the city of Milwaukee, regardless of whether you are charged with a check fraud case or first degree homicide, public defenders are paid $75 an hour. So it's a no-brainer as to which cases will get a public defender. But unfortunately, that's also causing a backlog in our court system, and it's costing individuals to be kept in jail for a lot longer waiting for their trials because they can't get public defenders. Judges are finding themselves having to call private attorneys and personally ask them to take on these cases. Now, when judges make that phone call to find a lawyer, that means that Milwaukee County is on the hook for paying that cost. The cost then goes up to $100 per hour. That's unfortunate, especially coming from a county that is finding it so hard to make ends meet. Now, in the governor's budget, he proposes $10 million increase each year that could be used for recruitment, retraining, and also used to help bump that pay for public defenders to $100 an hour, which is equal to that Milwaukee County is having to pay. Milwaukee County should not be on the hook for paying those resources. It is not their responsibility. And the longer they continue to do that, they will have no choice but at some point to sue the state to recoup that money. And that's unfortunate because they shouldn't be using their resources in the first place. But that's just one example of how this state is starving those resources from those departments that we should be paying for.
We've heard how these DA offices have assistant DAs working 80 plus hours a week, really overworked and not able to keep up with the workload. Do you anticipate having to grow state government? How would you rectify that type of situation in the budget?
Well, you have to make sure, first of all, that those departments have the financial resources that they need. There is no better time to make sure that they get those resources than with this surplus budget. The question is, why do we have such a large surplus without giving that money back to Wisconsinites? It's their money they paid into the program, and they should be able to not only receive those payments perhaps directly, but also receive those payments in terms of resources. We can't expect our criminal justice system to be successful or to even operate in the capacity that it needs to if we continue to starve it of resources. That in turn makes the entire system fail.
Where do you think you will find the most consensus on this budget? Where will you find the most common ground with Republicans here?
I'm hoping that we find the most common grounds in terms of those agencies and departments that have been starved for resources for so long. Even though the governor did an excellent job with ARPA funds in making sure that our educational system was stable, we still need to increase that funding, and that's evident. There are so many other issues in terms of expanding Medicaid, for one, is huge. We have roughly about 90,000 individuals that could benefit by just raising that poverty level just another 38%. And of that 90,000 individuals, 30,000 of those individuals are uninsured. We can't continue to ask our clinics and our hospitals to bear that burden of providing care when those individuals need it for those who don't have insurance. It puts a financial burden on all of us. And that's something that the state should recognize. Not only that, we're leaving $1.6 billion on the table from not expanding Medicaid, and an additional over $2 billion that could be utilized from federal funds. We're just one of 11 states that hasn't passed the Medicaid expansion, and we have no excuse.
But Republicans haven't budged on that in the past, the Republican controlled majority of the legislature. What has changed?
The bottom line is that nothing has changed, and they need to be called out for that. They need to be called out for allowing these departments to just basically waddle in not having enough resources. They need to be called out in making sure that all of our Wisconsinites are okay, because at the end of the day, we all pay for those resources not being there, whether that's higher premium for individuals with private insurance, because hospitals are trying to make up for, you know, covering those individuals that are uninsured. We all pay the price at the end of the day.
Talking about the next two-year state budget cycle with Milwaukee State Senator LaTanya Johnson here, Democratic member of the legislature's Budget Writing Committee. There's a line for you. You can join in on the two-year budget at 800-642-1234. Let's talk about tax cuts. Joint Finance Committee Co-Chair Mark Bourne said the Republican budget will likely focus on tax cuts. Where could you agree with Republicans on tax cuts?
I do agree that we need tax cuts. There is no doubt about that. But we need to make sure that those tax cuts are at the middle class. We know that we grow our economy by making sure that our middle class individuals are okay and allowing that to spread outwards. So Governor Evers has in his proposal a 10% tax cut for our middle class. That's if you're a single filer and you make less than $100,000, or if you're a married joint filer, less than $150,000, you will get a 10% tax cut. Now, where I don't agree with the Republicans is that their Republican plan for a flat tax cut is just, it makes absolutely no sense, because if you are an individual making $1 million per year, you would get a $100,000 tax cut, leaving very little for the middle class and working class individuals who pay the bulk of taxes as it is. Those individuals that are in the 1% pay roughly about 7.7% in taxes, while the middle and working class pay 10%. That's not fair. That's not fair in any means, because those individuals are the ones who need their money the most, and they are the ones that are you know, paying the higher burden for working in the state.
Republicans, though, have pushed back on the governor's plan to cut taxes, saying it would raise some taxes. What earners would see higher taxes under his plan?
Those higher earners, those individuals that are in the 1%, they should pay higher taxes because they have higher earnings. It makes absolutely no sense that their taxes are lower than the middle and working class.
You were first appointed to Joint Finance Committee in 2018. How do you anticipate negotiations over this budget to be different or the same, perhaps, from previous years?
Let's just be honest. The Joint Finance Committee is a 16-member body, and only four of those individuals are Democrats. So we are not just in the minority. We are way in the minority. So it makes it extremely difficult for us to get what we want in the budget. And usually that is protecting the governor's budget, because we know that that's what the people want. He's had listening sessions all over the state, making sure that he gets input from the community before the budgets are crafted. And that's what we see in this budget, a budget that works for our children and works for their working families. Now, making sure that we highlight those good things that are in the budget for the community so they can come out to these listening sessions and express what's most important to them in this budget is key. But at the end of the day, what I've seen since 2018 is usually that the Republicans, they do what they want to do. And unfortunately, that has starved so many of our departments from valuable resources and prevented so many Wisconsinites from getting their fair share of the money that they've paid into the surplus.
State Senator LaTanya Johnson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Democratic State Senator LaTanya Johnson represents Milwaukee's 6th District, was first elected to the upper chamber in 2016. We continue this state budget discussion ahead with a vice chair of the legislature's budget writing committee. Republican Dewey Strobel will be here. Call in with your questions about the budget. Share your perspective, 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We focus on the two-year state budget that is in the hands of the legislature's Standing Committee Joint Finance. We heard the perspective of a Democrat on the 16-member panel, and now we turn to Vice Chair Republican Dewey Strobel of Saukville. Be part of this budget discussion at any point and elevate issues that you want the state to fund. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. State Senator Dewey Strobel, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. So after the governor's budget message, you pledged that Joint Finance Committee will create an actual responsible state budget. And this would be the third budget cycle where legislative Republicans draft a budget from scratch instead of working from the governor's proposal. Why start over?
Well, first off, the process works like this. The government has introduced his proposed budget, and now the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, they analyze it and they compile a summary. And then the Joint Finance Committee will hold hearings and with executive agencies and with public hearings around the state. In May, we get an updated revenue estimate, and we'll begin voting on budget provisions in May. And then, of course, we expect to send a budget to the governor by the end of June. And yes, we'll start with the base. Our first votes will be to work to reset the budget to base. And we'll look at the governor's ideas, certainly, but correct as the process is and has been forever, ultimately, Joint Finance will build that budget. And then at the end of the budget, the rewritten budget, it'll fund our priorities, it'll address our obligations, we'll cut taxes, we'll prepare for the future, and we'll protect the checkbook. That's kind of how the process works.
How does the governor's veto powers, the veto pen, affect your budget planning and writing?
Well, it certainly is out there, and that's one reason why a budget is meant for budgetary items, not policy. And this budget contains tons of fiscal policy that either have been previously rejected or have no place in the budget in the first place, really.
Can you give a for instance?
Well, first off, I'd like to stick to the numbers because I think that's really what a budget is about, and that's really what we're talking about here. And this budget is really an extreme outlier in new spending. It proposes total spending at $103.8 billion. That's a 17% increase from our current $87.5 billion budget. And really, it's almost triple the average appropriation growth since 07. So over eight prior budgets, our average has been about 6%. And this budget is over 17%.
It sounds like it's over the top for you. What to you would be more reasonable?
Well, you also have to consider this. Yes, we have over a $7 billion surplus. I think it's like $7.8 billion surplus. This budget takes our $7.8 billion surplus down to a $2.8 billion deficit by the end of the biennium. Because what it does is it put billions in one-time surplus into ongoing expenditures. Now, I think some of our surplus is due to prudent and conservative fiscal management over the past several years. But we also cannot forget that there was, I believe, $68 billion in federal money printed, that the federal government can do, that was pumped into the state of Wisconsin. That drove up sales taxes. It drove up income taxes. It's really one-time surplus that we have to be aware of. That isn't just money, that one-time money we cannot spend on ongoing obligations for the state of Wisconsin. The numbers just don't work.
In light of inflation, in light of a potential economic recession that we've heard from economists, how does that factor into your budget writing?
Well, that certainly is a factor. We need to prepare for those things. We've got employee raises that have to be done. We've got Medicaid for the poor and disabled, for poor and disabled health care. We've got public safety in the courts. We have the inflationary costs in government services. We've got UW system, tax cuts, and countless other priorities that are going to be looked at. And this budget just doesn't do that. In fact, when you look at what Evers proposed just for K-12 alone, the large amount of an increase, he proposes K-12 receive over 90% of the ongoing revenue growth for the entire state. And that's per the Fiscal Bureau of ongoing GPR tax collections that don't have anything to do with the huge influx of federal money that came. So again, with spending 90% of the ongoing revenue growth, how are we supposed to account for the 70,000 state employees and the raises they need to get, Medicaid, again, those items I just went through? That doesn't leave much to take care of the rest of the items that state budget is necessary to do. So frankly, it's not a serious proposal when that is what you come up with as a budget.
One of the pieces in that budget is expanding Medicaid under the guidelines laid out in the Affordable Care Act. Why not do that if you feel you're so pressured with all of these other needs?
Well, because ultimately when we do that, the state is taking on more costs. We have the Obamacare is out there, and Obamacare was designed to be a program that works. And that is on the federal government. When we take on and expand Medicaid, that's on us. I mean, currently Medicaid is 60 cents on the dollar reimbursement. It's an incredible expense for the state, but it's one that the state takes responsibility for. Now, we have been appeased by 90% if we expand Medicare, but that's not, we all know that won't last. And another thing it does, too, it undercuts the private insurance market. When you put more and more people on government insurance, it undercuts the private market. And that's really where many, many people have their insurance, and it's much more cost-effective, certainly for government, when people do pay for their own insurance through the private sector.
I'm going to reintroduce you here for a moment as we talk about the next Wisconsin state budget with Dewey Strobel, state senator representing the 20th district in Saukville. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about the two-year budget. Let's turn to family leave. Governor Evers is urging a plan for up to 12 weeks of paid family and medical leave for public and private employees. And last year, Republican candidates for governor signaled some level of support for paid family leave. Do you expect some form of paid leave in the legislature's budget?
I'm not sure about that. Personally, I don't support it. I believe that people want their take-home pay. And the more the government takes from that monthly or weekly or biweekly check, the less they have to spend on their families in the way they choose to. This is just another expansion of government taking money from people's personal paychecks and then paying it out in another way. There's a lot of people that will never use family leave. And there's a lot of businesses that can't handle having an employee gone like that.
And so what happens to that employee if they do need to have leave, perhaps a birth of a child or someone with a health struggle?
Sure. Well, I have eight children, and I think a lot of people have had kids over the years, and we haven't had paid family leave, and life has gone on. And it, again, has not then led to an expansion of government like this would lead to, and decide to unilaterally take money from people's paychecks that maybe aren't interested in this, that will never use it. That doesn't seem fair to me.
Let's turn to education. Governor Evers' budget would freeze enrollment for the state's taxpayer-funded private school voucher program. You say that's pushing a radical agenda. What are Republicans seeking here?
Well, what we need to do, we need to fund traditional public schools. We need to fund public charter schools, independent charter schools, and the school choice program.
But that takes money.
Well, of course it does, but every one of those systems that I just talked about educates kids. We pay to educate kids in the state of Wisconsin. We don't just pay because they go to a public school. We pay to educate kids. So if a public school is educating a child, we pay on a per capita basis. They receive money to educate that child. But if that child is not being educated by them, if that child is being educated by a choice or a charter school, then that money has to go to the choice or charter school. Why would we keep it at the public school that is not educating that child?
Public and charter schools alike, though, have had really big troubles filling teacher positions. How would JFC address the recruitment and retention issues in its budget?
Everyone throughout the state, no matter what business you're in, has had problems finding people to employ. That's not an unusual problem. And again, we fund schools. There was a massive influx of federal money into the public school districts this last biennium. $2.6 billion.
But that's one time, and it wasn't to fund teacher positions.
Correct.
It was to address COVID.
Not exactly. It was quadruple. That $2.6 billion was quadruple what Governor Evers hailed as a record school increase in his 19 budget that was dropped in by the federal government. And again, if you look at school funding, Wisconsin has increased school funding on a gross matter every year. Every year, school funding increases. And what's ironic is we're seeing continued decreases in enrollment, yet we are increasing funding for schools. And frankly, we are seeing declining results too. But schools will be adequately funded. They'll receive more money than they did last time, as always.
Republican State Senator Dewey Strobel of Sockville serves as a vice chair on the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. Still time to discuss our state's largest budget surplus in history, what you want funded in the next biennial budget, what you hear out of these budget discussions. 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The state's fiscal year officially ends June 30th, which is the statutory deadline for the next budget. And you can, Republican State Senator Dewey Strobel of Sockville is here, vice chair of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, as we spend time on looking at what comes next with the state budget. Let's go to Dennis now in Madison. Hi, Dennis.
Yes, I think one of the challenges the budget committee and the rest of the legislators are going to have for the budget is shaking the dust off themselves. They've been, for 9 months, they were off last year, so other than a few gavel in, gavel outs. But I don't hear any solutions from the representative Strobel. All I hear is no and no to what the other people want to do, but you guys don't seem to be willing to work with anybody. It's your way or the highway, and other than more tax cuts for the rich and the corporations, I don't think you guys really care about the average person in this state. At least your budgets certainly don't indicate that you do.
State Senator Dewey Strobel, go ahead.
Yeah, well, first off, you've got it all wrong on what the legislature does. The legislature is in session and has been in session for years and years and years, till around March. That's how it's been for years. No different this year, no different in the past few years than it's ever been. After that, in the off years, there's summer study sessions, there's the other hearings that go on, and there's customer service. There's attending to the needs of the constituents of the district. There's work that goes on all 2 years. But just because we're not in session, and frankly, not being in session isn't a bad thing. Sometimes when people in Madison aren't deciding how everybody else has to live their life, that's not always a bad thing. And so nothing's different about that in that regard. And as far as no, 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 I mean, I guess somebody's got to be the adult in the room. Again, when you look at a budget where 90% of the ongoing growth is spent on K-12 with all the other responsibilities that we have, I mean, it's just unrealistic to even talk about some of these items.
Well, let's talk about something that, and I don't mean to cut you off here, but let's talk about a place where we do see some common ground, and that is with shared revenue and local governments that have, you know, shared revenue that from the state, and that's largely stayed the same for nearly a decade. The governor wants to set aside 20% of state sales tax for those payments. What amount do you support in state aid for local governments?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because actually that is something that we have some agreement on. So contrary to the last caller, you know, if you would just want to point at that, you can say, wow, there's one thing. Okay. And frankly, that idea was being discussed by the legislature before January 1, actually even before this election in November. So I'm glad the governor has picked up that concept. I think there is something that we need to do in that regard. And we're having ongoing discussions, and I think that there will be some modifications in terms of shared revenue that our municipalities and other governmental entities will look favorably upon.
Well, we've also heard from Republican leaders that they're trying to find more sustainable long-term ways, and they've signaled they want to see reforms at the local level first, including, you know, the potential for government consolidations. Do you feel shared revenue increases should force local governments to change or do things differently first?
Well, I think that we can always look to innovate. We can always look to do things better. Governments should always strive to be more efficient. So certainly those are things that we need to discuss and we need to look after. I mean, the taxpayer resources of Wisconsin residents, they're scarce, and we need to value those. I mean, it's other people's money that we're spending. And when you're dealing with other people's money, you got to be careful and you got to be conservative and you have to be fiscally prudent.
So what are new sustainable funding sources that are viable, that's a viable shared revenue model going forward, so local governments can have the funds they need for their local residents?
Well, I think you just mentioned it a few minutes previously, that there'd be some certain amount of the state sales taxes that would be channeled in that direction.
But what amount is right, do you think?
I can't tell you. We need to do all the analysis. We need to look at that. We need to look at the budget in its entirety. I can't tell you right now.
That's all right. Talking about drafting the next Wisconsin state budget with Dewey Strobel, state senator representing the 20th district in Saukville. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. The governor's budget also plans for nearly $300 million to repair and renovate American Family Field, where the Brewers play, and the funding seeks to keep the team at the stadium through 2043. Should the state be funding pro sports stadiums?
It's something that we have to decide this session. We've done it in the past. I'm not sure whether we'll do it this session, but it's got to be a negotiation that has to be considered. Frankly, we have to decide, you know, we kind of have a gun to our head. What do we need to pay the Brewers in order to see that they will stay beyond 2030? We have to make a decision collectively whether that's a wise investment or not. We'll look at the numbers. We'll decide what might be an appropriate figure to secure the team beyond 2030. There certainly are benefits to revenue when the professional baseball is in the state. And we need to consider what those benefits are versus what the Brewers are going to extricate from us to stay here.
Is it fair to Wisconsin taxpayers who live a world away from Milwaukee and would never be able to take in a Brewers game?
I think there's a point where it wouldn't be fair, but I think there's a point where it would be fair for the reasons that I had just indicated, that they do generate state tax revenues, income tax, and tourism in the state of Wisconsin. So there is a fiscal benefit to having the Brewers in the state of Wisconsin. The question is, how much is that benefit? And what are we willing to pay the Brewers for that benefit? And I guess we're going to have those discussions.
Aaron wrote an email, and Aaron says there should be grants and funding toward arts and entertainment venues and programs. And these things seem, Aaron says, to be taken for granted and put to the wayside. What is your reaction?
Well, we do fund those things, but there are some people that think we never fund those enough. But when you look at, again, the scarce resources of the taxpayer and the necessary things that we need to fund for government, we have to keep those types of items that are discretionary in perspective. And when you talk about who all benefits from that type of thing, there's a very small subset that does financially at least benefit from those types of expenditures. And I think we just have to keep all that in mind.
Let's go to Tom in Madison now. Tom, hi, what's your question?
Good morning. I don't know where Senator Strobel got his economics degree, but I received mine from the London School of Economics. And, you're really kind of washed up here.
Well,
you're very good at Republican talking points.
But what is your question or your comment?
This money that we have, this vast surplus, needs to go back to local governments to rebuild our state precisely because the legislature and the Senate have been out of work for a long time. And when they are in session, they don't get anything positive or beneficial done.
State Senator Strobel, we're close to being out of time. Your reaction?
Well, I wish we could get beyond this out of work thing. It's been that way for years when Doyle was our governor, no different, and every governor prior to that. So, if we can't get beyond that talking point, kind of hard to get involved in fruitful discussions.
State Senator Dewey Strobel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. You take care.
You too. Republican State Senator Dewey Strobel of Sockville was first elected to the upper chamber in 2015. Earlier, we heard from State Senator LaTanya Johnson of Milwaukee. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.